Chapel Hill Public Library also tonight is having that event that we've been talking about on the air all day from 6 to 8 p.m., a panel discussion called Beyond the Headlines, Confederate Monuments, Historical Memory, and Free Speech. Could not be timelier. And as luck would have it, today is also the day that we are talking books with Susan Brown, the director of the Chapel Hill Public Library, and also the executive director for Community Arts and Culture for the town of Chapel Hill. How are you?
I'm great.
You're racking up so many official positions that the entire segment is just going to be me saying who you are.
That would be awesome.
Right?
And if we could add tongue-tapping, toe-tapping, tongue-twisting executive director for community arts.
Was that a Moorfields reference or a Durham Coca-Cola reference?
Both, right? Okay. I'm going to work them all in.
Spirit-lifting, toe-tapping, bluegrass music.
And what was the one you made me read that time about the ribs?
Cap-twisting.
Do you remember the ribs?
Oh.
I got to read it with the...
No, I can't remember. Barbecued baby back ribs, yeah, from Spanky's. I can't remember what the language was on that.
We're not here to talk about ribs.
No, we are not. We are here to talk about this event that's coming up tonight, which the Chapel Hill Public Library is putting on in conjunction with Carolina Public Humanities at UNC. And we are also joined by the executive director of Carolina Public Humanities, Max Orr. How are you?
I'm doing just fine. It's great to be here, and I want to compliment you on the reading of that bluegrass. I could hear the rhythm of the music. It was really lovely.
You just close your eyes and imagine banjo music, and then you read the reader, and then it's all good.
And I'll say, I just know it was Max, whose name I can't pronounce.
Right.
You said it very well.
Thank you.
Or,
as far as you know.
It's not spelled that way.
Yes, O-W-R-E.
Or Aurora.
Those immigrant ancestors of mine wanted to confuse people.
Is it Nordic?
I would like to point out that Susan told us in advance that she was going to mispronounce the name.
Don't show what's behind the curtain.
I love showing what's
behind
the curtain.
Never let them see you make the sausage.
But here's what I didn't realize.
What?
I just know him as Max.
Right.
Your executive director, you have two executive directors.
That is true.
On the show this afternoon.
This
we have
power.
Bumped up the level of discourse.
It's almost like a black hole of authority.
This is what happens when two executive directors get into a room together. You know, last hour we were doing the Kids Q question with Meredith Richard, who is also the executive director of Musical Empowerment, and I said, wouldn't it be great to be like a fly on the wall? We're talking about like where would you go if you could be invisible for 5 minutes? Was the question of the week, and I said, wouldn't it be great if you could be a fly on the wall or invisible in the room where like executive decisions get made, like political decisions get made, to see not just the decision but like how it got made. This is that room, because there are multiple executive directors in the room.
Are we gonna make some decisions in the next 20 minutes?
We're gonna talk about the great books that people should read in conjunction with this event tonight.
Okay.
Yeah.
Let's talk
about
you.
Max, FYI, this is the conversation that you signed on.
I'm ready for it.
Jump in, man.
You have very exalted ideas of what an executive director does. I come approving timesheets and things like that that aren't that
pretty
exciting.
Pretty much, right.
So.
Yeah, like the executive producer of a movie, right? Like it's really the director.
They have
that does
money,
all the
though.
Work.
That's the difference.
Right. Yeah, unfortunately. Okay, so tell us about the event tonight.
Okay.
So, yeah.
So, a couple things, and Max will just jump in.
Mm-hmm.
Or start off.
Go ahead, you
okay.
start.
Okay, so the Carolina, they are no longer the Program in the Humanities and Human Values, which I sometimes call them. They are now Carolina Public Humanities.
Short and sweet.
Yes.
And to the point.
We have partnered with them over the last few years on many, many great things. And so when they call us up less than a week before an event, possibly, and say, hey, we've got this great idea for this big event that's very on point, on topic, very controversial, and we're looking for a public partner, we say, come on over,
absolutely.
Y'all.
Right.
So
yeah.
The Chapel Public Library and the Carolina Public Humanities are putting together this event. I'm going to let Max talk about the public humanities, what his program does, and also who's going to be at the event.
Okay.
Take it away, Max.
Well, fantastic. We have Carolina Public Humanities is part of the College of Arts and Sciences. We've been around as the Program in Humanities since 1979, putting on public programming that bridges the gap between faculty and scholarship and the greater community. Mm-hmm. Does this sound like something I've said before?
A little bit.
Yeah.
And, but you do it well.
This is what's known as an elevator speech, yes. Everyone. Yes.
And so one of the things about the Carolina Public Humanities is we're trying to be more responsive to, you know, community issues and whatnot. We have scheduled programs that take months to put together and prepare and book the spaces for, but we also want to be nimble and really respond to what's going on in the zeitgeist, if you will, what's going on in the community. And this was just one of those things we really couldn't pass up, this opportunity to have a civil discussion. One of the things Carolina Public Humanities believes is that fostering dialogue and reflection on topics is a great way to sort of get to better understand ourselves as citizens and as humans together in this great mystery we call life. I'm going over my head here at this point. So this is a great opportunity for us to do that, to foster dialogue on what has obviously been a very critical issue recently.
Yeah, and say a little bit more about the concept of the public humanities, too, because the changing of the name from program into public humanities, I think, is significant. And I think it's really cool because there's so much in terms of opportunity and potential for humanities and social sciences as well to sort of get the word out about what they do, what they know, what they teach, the research that they do. And Carolina really has been conscious about doing that in a way that I think a lot of universities are not and should be more of.
Sure. And it's a good point. Public humanities as a term is something that if you were to Google it, perhaps, well, before Google existed,
yeah.
You might not come across it, but you'll see it coming up all over the place. There are grants being put forward by the Mellon Foundation, mm-hmm. by the National Endowment for the Humanities, so long as that exists. For projects in the public humanities. What the main emphasis of the public humanities are is to really think about critical thinking, and this is an age where I have nothing against STEM education. It's obviously incredibly important. I certainly am a proponent of vocational education as well in terms of skills people need, but the humanities always, humanity and the arts, of course, always get short shrift when it comes to budgets, and there is somewhat of a polemic about the usefulness of these particular disciplines, and also with the mode of inquiry that the humanities like to foster, and that mm-hmm. is much more of a, again, I mentioned dialogue and reflective type of inquiry as opposed to just scientific analysis. So that's an important point, and I think one of the needs for it can be clearly seen in the, and not to put too fine a point on it, the lack of critical thinking that seems to be filling our public sphere these
yes.
days, and people are not taking the time to analyze the data that they're getting, i.e. fake news, etc. They're not taking time to think about the prejudices that might inform their own opinions on all sorts of topics. So not only is it nationally an important idea, the idea of the public humanities. It's what we've been doing since 1979, and we wanted to just make it very clear that that's what we're all about, that we are facing the public. It helps us distinguish ourselves from units that focus on teaching in the university and units that have a specific mission to serve the state.
Cool. And again, humanities.unc.edu is the website for Carolina Public Humanities. So you can go on there and get more info.
And lots of programs.
Yes,
yeah.
They do great programs, and they do them at Flyleaf and mm-hmm. at places like the Friday Center mm-hmm. and at all kinds of venues. But I just want to follow up what Max said, because what's great about the partnership that we have is we at most libraries, but especially we at Chapel Hill Public, really feel that the public library is the place for the community to come together for difficult
yeah.
conversations. So we try not to shy away from that. We try and lean into it. So mm-hmm. we have the space and we have the reach. And what's great about partnering with them is they bring that reflection and ability to have that civil discourse and bring that critical thinking focus to it. So it's a really great partnership. And this is something that we would like to do more with them or whomever. But if folks remember back a couple years ago when there was the incident with the teacher at Orange County who
yes.
read King and
Omar
King.
Curry, yeah.
Yes, and it was in the headlines. And so after that story broke, we were sitting around in a meeting and we said, well, everybody's talking about this book and this issue. What if we just had him come here and read the book?
Yep.
And my colleagues from across the state in some more perhaps not as progressive areas were like, girl, you are crazy. What are you doing? I'm like, but that's what a library's for.
Yes,
so
exactly.
This is that same type of thing. And we hope to be able to position ourselves more to bring on partners, whatever our community is struggling with, that we're a place that we can come together and talk about it.
Did they actually say, girl, you are crazy, what are you doing? Because if so, those are some awesome people who are working under some extreme circumstances. Okay.
I have the email. Somebody literally said that. So tonight's event, I do want to get a couple things in here.
Yes,
I'm
going to
let Max talk about the speakers, but a couple of things. The event is from 6 till 8.
Mm-hmm.
We are expecting a full house.
Yes.
And you know, if you know anything about the library, parking can be a challenge.
Mm-hmm.
Our good friends down the street at FastMed on the corner of Estes and Franklin
yep.
have agreed to let us use their lower lot for some overflow parking.
Awesome.
We're asking our staff to park. There's a little off-site spot that we can park in. So we're trying to free up parking spaces. If you can rideshare, carpool, whatever, please do. We're also going to live stream it. We're going to try Facebooking Live this event, and we're going to record it.
Awesome.
So if you can't get in for whatever reason, you can follow along there. It's in room B, the big room, and we are aiming to start right at 6.
Okay.
So we're going to start the program then. People, of course, can, you know, filter in later, but that's kind of the nuts and bolts of the program.
We run a disciplined ship. We will start at 6.
Yes, we will.
It begins right at 6:03, everyone.
We have a great mix of speakers, and really the Carolina Public Humanities came to us with some speakers lined up, and then we also added a couple of tweaks. So I'm going to let Max talk about who's talking.
Go for it.
Great. Yeah. Well, of course. I want to thank Susan for bringing Chris Blue in, of course, Chief of Police, and that's a fantastic addition to this panel. I think one of the things that think about the burden that the police departments have to face when they're sort of negotiating or mitigating the high emotions around these issues, wanting to value the right to free speech, wanting to protect property, that's a difficult situation to be in. And so I'm really interested in hearing his perspective on that. Danielle Christmas is a wonderful professor of English and comparative literature up at Carolina, and she's been just such a sensitive voice on African-American authors and African-American experience in the United States. And I think she'll bring a wonderful perspective on that. I think it's very important to have people representing all aspects of this. Jamie Fiocco, of course, is the owner of Flyleaf Books. When we first started thinking about doing this, we were going to work at Flyleaf Books. We've done a lot of programs there. One of the things that Jamie brings to the table is that is a program we did together where she's faced some issues with people trying to curtail the free speech at Flyleaf Books with certain programs. And there was a program we ran, attempted to run several years ago, where we faced this issue. And not just that experience, but other experiences have really galvanized her to be a voice for free speech through the national network of independent booksellers. So I think she'll have an interesting perspective on, you know, where are the limits of free speech or how can we promote free speech as well as live in a dignified and respectful society. William Sturkey is a fantastic historian of African-American history from UNC, and he can really bring the critical edge to the history of the African-American experience and what these monuments mean to African-Americans. Harry Watson, distinguished professor of Southern history, he himself is a child of the South, and an interesting point about Harry Watson is that he is from the same town, Greensboro, as the final speaker, Ed Yoder, who is, of course, a distinguished journalist, wrote for years for the Herald Sun, and both are from Greensboro. And, you know, Ed has written some very, very thoughtful pieces that are defending the existence of these statues and advocating for their remaining in place. And it's wonderful to have all perspectives on this, and that Ed and Harry, who know each other from their past, that should be a very interesting discussion, I think.
Awesome. I don't mean to pick out the randomest point from what you just said, but what happened at Flyleaf Books?
We put a program on there called Humanities in Action, which is a wonderful program. Again, go to humanities.unc.edu to look at all of them. We'll be doing wonderful programs there. They're on Tuesday afternoons. Humanities in Action is designed to be sort of a civic humanist exercise where we look at potentially controversial or contemporary issues and put them through what we do, reflection and dialogue, small speeches. And I had a person I knew who was the vice president at the time of a very large oil exploration company.
Okay.
And he was a geophysicist and an incredibly thoughtful person, incredibly educated and aware of all the controversies around fossil fuels. And we were going to have this program there, and there were some environmental activists who just assumed he was there to talk about fracking in North Carolina, which he wasn't, and in fact he's entirely against, because there's no gas under there that's worth anything.
Mm-hmm.
But it was, you know, the activism in this case was cutting the other way, if you will, that we were the threat to shut down the bookstore and the threat against public the program of the humanities for being pro-fracking, which was not at all the idea. So this is one of those areas where, you know, free speech around interesting and difficult topics can really raise the emotions of a lot of people.
Well, again, 6 to 8 p.m. tonight is the panel discussion. It's called Confederate Monuments, Beyond the Headlines, Confederate Monuments, Historical Memory and Free Speech. It's at the Chapel Hill Public Library, co-presented by Carolina Public Humanities. Max Orr, you just heard him with Carolina Public Humanities. Humanities.unc.edu is their website for more information. We've also got Susan Brown from the library here. And insofar as this is talking books, we got to recommend some books in conjunction with
Let's
all of
do
this.
It.
So what do we got?
Okay, I'm going to recommend two very quickly.
Okay.
One is one that I want to reread, and one is one that I want to read for the first time. So the book that I want to reread, I may have talked about it before. It's Confederates in the Attic by Tony Horowitz, who's a wonderful writer.
Really good book,
the
yeah.
premise of that book is basically Tony Horowitz is known for some great writing and reporting, and he'd been, you know, he has reported from actual current day war zones all over the world. He buys a house in Virginia and he realizes that he's sort of surrounded by this Civil War reenactment group and culture, and he's fascinated by it. So he delves deep into, he spends like 2 years mm-hmm. with these reenactors, and he learns, he really digs into why the Confederacy is held so dear to folks, mm-hmm. why it feels for some like it was yesterday, why they still are so deeply connected to it. So if you want to understand that side of it, and why people feel this way, it's a great, it's a such a well-written book. It's a fun book to read. He's a great writer.
You know, that was the UNC student summer book a few years ago.
That's
as
right.
Well, so
yes.
Great
yeah.
choice.
So that's one that I want to reread. And then one that I want to read, I recently came across this, and maybe y'all have read it, but it came out a couple years ago. It's called Ebony and Ivy, Race, Slavery, and the Troubled History of America's Universities. Mm-hmm. And I think he cites UNC, and he talks about Harvard and Yale and Rutgers and all of those, and he really looks into the history of public universities and slavery's involvement in their building and their foundation and their institutions. So
awesome.
That one is Ebony and Ivy, which is a great title too, by Craig Stephen Wilder.
Cool.
Like
that's
my two.
I like that text too, because it does show this is a national issue.
Yeah,
you know, we look
definitely.
At northern schools as well in that text. It's really fantastic.
And by the way, can I just note that the academic, it would be Talking Text with Max Orr.
That is.
Or Max Orr.
You did it.
Talking text
with Max
Orr. We're talking text.
So
you
close. So close.
We almost made it.
I love that, though. It's not a book. It's a text.
It's not a
now,
book. It's
Max,
a text.
What
like
text
that.
Did you
well, So adding to that, because you mentioned Confederates in the Attic was with the summer reading program. UNC does a great job picking the summer reading mm-hmm. books, as does Duke. And Blood Done Signed My Name
yeah,
by
absolutely.
Tim Tyson, another more recent one, is also worth adding to that.
So I picked out a few books, and the one that's interesting, I met by training an historian in France, mm-hmm. And there's a wonderful historian, Pierre Nora, who wrote Les Lieux de Mémoire, also known in
Sout
English, also known as, translated as Realms of Memory. Now, I would not suggest that everyone go out and get the three volumes of Realms of Memory and read this in-depth look at French history, but just the introduction is enough to understand how he has situated that monuments do this sort of homogenization of the mm-hmm. past, and that we create invented traditions and invented heritage by the choice of things that we associate with the nation. And you know, he looks at all sorts of sites. Some of them are literal sites, and some of them are things like just the slogan, Liberty, Equality, Fraternity, and says how these things are recycled and become sort of flattened understandings of the past. As a theoretical framework, I think that introduction would really help explain kind of some of the mechanisms that are at work with these Confederate monuments. More to the point, I think that letting people understand the experience of African Americans during Jim Crow and when most of these monuments were put up would be incredibly important and helpful. So Leon Litvak's The Trouble in Mind, Black Southerners in the Age of Jim Crow mm-hmm. is a fantastic work. If you're looking for something a little bit simpler, and it is simplified, I think it does an unfortunate kind of paints the African American community as the just without agency, but it is a good overview and much more accessible is American Nightmare, The History of Jim Crow by Gerald Packard. So those are two works that I think are very important to understand. And finally, if you can just get a hold of anything by Ta-Nehisi Coates,
yes,
to get a sense of what it feels like to be African-American and black in America and dealing with these types of stimulus, if you will.
And sort of adding to Realms of Memory, Imagined Communities, right,
sure,
by Benedict Anderson, another work sort of along the same lines. And I'll add on to that and go back a little bit further. One of the things that's really struck me about this whole conversation is the extent to which people defend the monuments and want to keep them up because we don't want to whitewash history and forget that the raising of the monuments in the first place was part of a whitewashing of history.
And
there's so much about the era after the Civil War and into Jim Crow that we have very intentionally forgotten. So adding to the ones that you mentioned, I'll mention the two sort of seminal works on Reconstruction, which are Eric Foner's book on Reconstruction.
Absolutely.
And W.E.B. Du Bois's work, Black Reconstruction in America, from the, was it 1930-something it got published, 36, something like that, still holds up, though, and definitely worth reading, even though they're long.
Yeah.
They take a while, but they're really good. And,
my
and
books
part
were
of an
short.
American
you can
history.
Read my books in, like, an afternoon. Yeah. I'm just telling
Confederates in the Attic, you can fly through. That's a great one. Awesome. Okay, other information that people need to know about the event tonight or Carolina Public Humanities?
I forgot to mention our moderator is Dr. Lloyd Kramer. Mm-hmm. He's a director of the Carolina Public Humanities, and he is going to give a fantastic overview of just notions of nationalism.
Mm-hmm.
And how what this really says is it's almost two irreconcilable ideas of what the nation is, and it's based on our own sort of stories we tell about what the nation is, and that leads to conceptions of nationalism. And I think that'll be a nice sort of overview that allow people to jump into this discussion of free speech and the monuments themselves.
Yeah. Again, humanities.unc.edu is the website for Carolina Public Humanities. The event tonight at the library is from 6 to 8 p.m. Susan Brown, Max Orr, thank you so much.
Thank you,
Aaron.
And we'll talk to you next week.